Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. 12 years ago, a man in Rock Island County pleaded guilty to murdering his own son. Nathaniel Onsrud was sentenced to 60 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections, but this week, 13 years after the child's death, Nathaniel Onsrud walked out of Menard Correctional Center. That's thanks to the work of the Illinois Innocence Project, which is part of the Center for State Policy and Leadership at the University of Illinois Springfield. Joining us to talk about the case is Lauren Kaysberg. She's Chicago Legal Director for the Illinois Innocence Project. Lauren, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, thank you for having us.
And Michael Oppenheimer, who's from the civil rights and criminal defense law firm of Erickson and Oppenheimer, who also worked on the case. Michael, thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for having me.
And as ever, we invite our listeners to join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Lauren, can you take us back to 2007 to begin? Who was Dax and what happened to him?
Yeah, you know, we've really been celebrating the fact that Nate was able to be released and walk free, but this is a bittersweet victory because, you know, what happened in 2007 was that a four-month-old baby tragically died. So Dax was born 10 weeks premature and suffered from some very serious medical complications and ultimately died because of those medical complications. And when Dax became unresponsive and ultimately died, he had been in the care of his dad, Nate, who did everything he could to save him, but it was too late. And these medical complications just overtook this baby. And so at that point, the police, you know, got involved as they would with the death of a baby, and it sort of took on a life of its own from there.
And the death, Lauren, initially was not ruled as a homicide, right? The forensic pathologist did not. It took some persuading, I guess. How would you characterize that? What changed there?
Yeah, I think persuading is a good word. Initial reviews by medical professionals looking at this death and at the autopsy records showed no signs at all of foul play. And it was very clear from the beginning that this was a medical-related death. And it was only after other forensic pathologists were brought in and that law enforcement and detectives were involved, that they sort of came up with their own theory based on some hunches that they had that maybe Nate had something to do with this. They completely changed what the science showed and formulated a case around Nate having been involved in his son's tragic death.
So, Michael, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about Nate's interactions with the law enforcement in Rock Island County. How did that go for him?
Sure. And I would agree with everything Lauren just said. But, you know, basically what happened here was the coroner from Rock Island County and the police department decided that, you know, they couldn't just allow an accidental death to occur, as tragic as it is. And they had to blame someone. They blamed Nate. So what, through the good work of the Innocence Project and working with us, we hired an outside pathologist, Dr. Michael Bodden, out of New York, and his preliminary findings, which are not done yet, were that this is an accident. And what happened was the coroner and the police department decided to conspire with a Cook County medical examiner at the time to get her to change her ruling from accidental death to homicide. Once that happened, they decided that they needed a statement from Nate in order to perfect their case and to prove him guilty, because they really had no evidence whatsoever that he was guilty of a murder because it wasn't a murder. So what they did was they interrogated him over a long period of hours. And the interrogation, like many of these coerced confessions, takes advantage of Nate's educational level, the fact that he was remorseful and not remorseful, the fact that he was despondent over the death of his only child. So they took advantage of that. And they basically coerced a confession, combining that confession with the medical examiner's new ruling that it was a homicide. They then tendered that to his public defender. And based on what the public defender had, she convinced Nate to plead guilty to murder. What we've learned later is, and the investigation is ongoing, is that thousands of documents, maybe up to thousands of documents, were never turned over from the state's attorney's office to Nate's lawyer at the time. And that kind of sealed his fate.
You know, Michael, you're, a criminal defense and civil rights attorney by trade. Why would somebody plead guilty to something if they didn't do it?
Well, I'm a former prosecutor, too. And then I became a criminal defense attorney. And now for the last 15 years, we do primarily civil rights. What we're learning and what's happened is for years and years and years, no one would believe that someone would confess to something they didn't do. And that's simply not true. What the police department does is they simply coerce people. And it doesn't have to be by a physical beating or anything like that. It's psychological torture. They use the fact that he was despondent over the child's death. He had no attorney with him. It's just like in the movies and on TV where they say, don't talk unless your attorney's with you. That's absolutely true. So he not only wanted to please the investigators, they used his sadness and his grief over the death of his child to make him feel guilty. And to say things like, maybe I pushed him down too hard. Maybe I set him down too hard. Maybe I did this. Maybe I did that. And even worse. So people tend to say things because there's promises that they can go home. There's promises that if they don't say it, that they'll spend the rest of their life in prison. There's all sorts of things that the police departments do sometimes to convince people to plead guilty when they really didn't do it. And we're seeing that all across the country for many, many years. And the Innocence Project has done great work. But that's why they're in existence, because people do confess to things they didn't do. And that's what happened here.
So, Lauren, and I should remind our listeners, if you're just joining us, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Lauren Caseberg, who's the Chicago legal director of the Illinois Innocence Project, which is part of the University of Illinois Springfield, and Michael Oppenheimer, who's an attorney with Erickson and Oppenheimer. They both helped secure the release of a Rock Island County man named Nathaniel Onsrud, who they say was wrongly convicted of murdering his own son back in 2008. So, Lauren, how does this case come to the Innocence Process? Maybe it's an Innocence Project, and maybe you can talk a little bit about your process for vetting cases. I imagine you get far more than you actually take up.
Yes. I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of innocent people in prisons throughout Illinois. We currently, at the Illinois Innocence Project at the University of Illinois Springfield, represent dozens of people in their innocence claims. And we have, you know, hundreds of requests that come our way a year. The fact is that our prisons really are packed full of innocent people. And I think what's interesting and relates to Nate's case is that many of them pled guilty. You know, I think it seems like, you know, and as Michael just talked about with false confessions, you know, it's counterintuitive to think that an innocent person would confess as something that they didn't do or that they would plead guilty. But in fact, it's quite the opposite. An innocent person is of the mindset that they know that they did not do this. And there's faith in the system that at some point this will be made right and people will learn this and my lawyers will work on my behalf and it will come to light. But the truth is that our system is one that's based around finality and not about truth or justice in the end. And so often these innocent people end up spending decades, if not their lives, in prison. So ordinarily what happens is that an innocent person will write to us and ask us to help them. And we have a very thorough vetting process that we undertake at the Illinois Innocence Project, where individuals fill out a questionnaire, and we have undergraduate students who are part of the University of Illinois Springfield, as well as law students and graduate students at various schools who work with us on evaluating cases. And we have a tremendous staff there and volunteers and people who help us sort of sift through the requests that we get. You know, our project is an interesting one because we're fairly small, but we're small and mighty. And I think part of that is because of our small staff and the limited number of cases we can take, we really push forward on cases once we accept them with our full passion and our full heart, because we know we represent innocent people and we just need to prove it.
Okay. So Michael, can you talk about once this case is taken on, you begin doing the investigative work. Can you talk about your communications with a state's attorney, the prosecutor in Rock Island County? How did that go?
Sure. Well, Lauren and I both did this. Lauren had a great part in this. Once we reviewed the case and realized that there was something, for want of a better word, really suspicious here, Lauren and I talked. We reached out to the state's attorney of Rock Island. The current state's attorney of Rock Island was great. They agreed to review the case right away because we called because we wanted to get the rest of the file because we didn't know what was in it. They did a really, in this world, light speed, quick review of about a week and a half. They got back to us with information concerning, number one, that they believe that lots and lots of pages of documents, potentially in the thousands, were never turned over to the defense attorney at the time. They also informed us, I don't want to quote them, but they informed us that the state's attorney at that time that was handling the case was fired from their department for withholding documents on other cases. So after we talked to them, after a review, the decision was made by the state's attorney's office to vacate his sentence and vacate the conviction. So normally this process, as Lauren well knows, could take years and years and years and many, many, many court proceedings, and sometimes it never gets done. So the fact that they did that this quick and prompt was great, and I commend them for doing that. And, you know, and they should have done that. This was a gross injustice. In my opinion, this was a criminal act by the people that were involved to essentially frame him. And I commend the state's attorney's office for acting so promptly.
You know, can you help me understand? I'm a little unclear on what the posture of the case is now. So the conviction has been vacated, but it's not over yet for Nate, right? There's another court hearing coming up in September. Is it possible he could face a retrial based on what the state's attorney decides to do?
Yes. I don't want to speak too soon. It is possible. Anything's possible. They could review this case. They could decide that they want a retrial. Obviously, we would fight that with everything we have. But I'm hoping, since the state's attorney's office has done the right thing thus far, they have really done the right thing, that the evidence will show. And we still don't have the rest of the file. They've made it available to us. We will have that next week. But I believe that all the evidence will show, number one, that because the state's attorney's office never tendered the other documents, and number two, that Nate is actually innocent. So it's not just they withheld documents. It's he is actually innocent. And I believe they withheld documents showing he was innocent. But even the evidence that we have thus far through our own research, our own second autopsy, through everything that we've seen, Nate is actually innocent. And I believe and I hope that they will do the right thing. And this part of the case hopefully will be over in early September.
And so, Lauren, I wanted to ask you about that. So the ultimate goal here is to get what I think what's called a certificate of innocence. Yes. And Michael, if you wouldn't mind, if I could just ask you to mute your phone. We were getting some background noise.
Sure.
No, that's fine. Thank you. But Lauren, even if people get a certificate of innocence, it's not necessarily an easy path forward for them, right? After being in prison for so long.
Right. I mean, you know, Nate woke up, you know, on Friday morning last week and was given the news that this was coming down the road for him. And, you know, within a matter of days was released from prison after living there for 13 years for something that he didn't do. When he walked out of prison, he walked out only with the property that he had acquired while in prison, which is very little. Anyone in his situation, the clients that we work with who are released, walk out to nothing. There's no process through the state that provides them with anything. A certificate of innocence is not guaranteed for everyone. It's another court process, as you noted. And even when you get down, you know, that's months and months down the road, if not longer. And so it ends up falling upon those of us who do this work to step up. And we've found a really incredible community in Springfield who has stepped up to help Nate in this process. But I mean, he's rebuilding his entire life. He went into prison as a 20-year-old grieving father and is coming out as a 33-year-old man needing to rebuild his life with a 13-year gap in his work history and his life history. So there's a lot that needs to be done. There's, you know, so much more that needs to be done by our governments to help innocent people who are released from prison, because it's left up to them to build their lives after they've been taken from them.
Okay. Well, this is a story I'm sure we're going to continue to follow as it continues to play out. And sadly, as you pointed out, there have been hundreds of people found innocent, and I'm sure we will be speaking with you again in the future on another case. Lauren Caseburg is the Chicago Legal Director for the Illinois Innocence Project, which is part of the Center for State Policy and Leadership at the University of Illinois Springfield. We've also been speaking with Michael Oppenheimer, who's an attorney with Erickson and Oppenheimer, a civil rights-focused law firm in Chicago. Lauren and Michael, thank you both so much for speaking with us today on the 21st.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up after the break, we're going to be talking about Illinois-based Quaker Oats Company's decision to pull the Aunt Jemima brand from stores later this year and ultimately replace it with something else. If you have thoughts about this topic, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone lines are open, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Give us a call to talk about not just that brand, but other brands with a legacy of racial stereotypes. That's all coming up on the 21st. More to come after a short break. Stay with us.